We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
We had Coleman Smith who said, I read the visitor list article. If Josh Petty makes the trip, do you take him down the road? They could have pushed for Jack Lang. Were they just not in love with him?
Let me say something real quick. Ryan, you have you had an update last night on Josh Petty, yep, or his visit. So Coleman, you are now a member of the message board. I would encourage you to check that out, but he will not be visiting this weekend. And probably, probably not next weekend either. Did I read your update correctly, Ryan? Probably not.
No. He is planning on being there for the Blue Gold game next weekend. He
might. So the issue was for this weekend.
For this weekend, yeah, he's working through a little bit of a family personal issue right now. So yes, rescheduling for next week.
Okay. Here's the deal. Number one, there's a difference in talent between Josh Petty and Jack Lang. Notre Dame evaluates Josh Petty as a kid that you say no to. You don't say no to. Kirby Lambert was that way last year. Charles Jagasaw was that way the year before. There are some guys who just, yeah, we may not get him, and it's going to be tough, and we don't have a quote-unquote need for him, but he's an elite player. So if he's interested, we're interested. Jack Lang's a good football player, right? I think you and I both agree that Jack Lang's a good prospect. I mean, I if somebody to tell me they think he's a top 100 player, I wouldn't push back against him. I don't have him in the top 100 yet, because I want to see some things from him as a senior, but the upside is certainly that of a top 100 player. No question. But they just don't view him as a guy that is a you have to take kind of guy. And you know, so you could agree or disagree with that, and that's totally fair. Anyone can have that opinion, but that's just how Notre Dame felt. He was not a guy that they looked at and said two. They said two things they didn't think about him. Number one is, He's not a guy that's so much better than the other kids on the board that we have to take him and tell them no. That's number one. And then the other part is, he's not a guy that we have to go beyond our desired numbers to take. That's the other part of it, the evaluation of Jack Lang. Now, again, I know some people disagree with that, understand it, but that's how they viewed him. They just don't view him as a guy that is a take no matter what type of player. at this point in time.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious cash. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. We are the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You heard it. 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It is so easy to use. All you have to do is download the app in the App Store or Google Play Store, sign up, add some funds, and you're in. Then you just find your favorite player and decide more or less on the suggested stat. It really is that easy. The night I joined, I picked Hannah Hidalgo to have more than 14 points, Maddie Westbeld to have less than 10 rebounds, and Marcus Burton to have more than 18 points. And guess what? I hit on all three. Bing, bang, boom, baby. Money in my pocket. It was just that easy. Download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Ballpeen Shalala asks, who do you think might be an unexpected leader on offense this season and on defense? Unexpected leader on offense. Jaden Greathouse, I don't know. I mean, maybe him, but I don't know how unexpected that would be. And I don't mean, when I'm taking your question to mean leader as in like leadership, not leader on receptions or receiving yards or touchdowns, right? If I'm reading your question incorrectly, please let me know. But I'm taking it as like more leadership standpoint. I mean, maybe Ashton Craig, maybe him, you know, as the center, maybe takes a little bit more of an early unexpected leadership role. You'd kind of hope that it would be him. I think that everybody else that would be a leader on offense is probably guys that we would expect, right? It's Jaden Thomas, it's Riley Leonard, it's you know, Pat Coogan, it's Rocco Spindler, it's those type of veteran players. So that would be my best bet on that type of deal. On defense, unexpected leaders. You know, again, I don't know that any of the guys that Christian Gray, I think maybe it might be a guy that's shown a little bit more leadership through how he plays than maybe you expect. But again, when you have Xavier Watts, you have Benjamin Morrison, you have Jack Kaiser, you have Riley Mills, you have Howard Cross, there's not a role for really anyone else to be a leader. You don't need anyone to be a leader. You don't need a Don Shuler to lead. You don't need Christian Gray to lead. You don't need, you know, some of those other, you know, Drake Bowen to lead per se. from the standpoint of like leadership off the field and stuff. It's more so his leadership has to be, okay, you're the Mike linebacker. You got to take control. So again, that doesn't make it unexpected. That's just kind of the, you do expect it. So I don't know that there would be an unexpected leader on defense outside of maybe Christian Gray, just because all those other guys would just be expected. And that's the thing that's unique about Notre Dame on defense is they lost some very good veteran players. Cam Hart was a captain. J.D. Bertrand was a two-time captain. Maris Leofau was a three-year starter. You know, Javonte Jean-Baptiste was a six-year guy. Like, they lost some. Thomas Harper was a fifth-year guy. D.J. Brown was a six-year guy, provided some leadership. So they did lose a lot of guys, but they have a ton of veterans coming back as well. You know, like I said, Jack Kaiser at linebacker is a six-year senior. Howard Cross is a six-year senior, multi-year starter. Riley Mills is a fifth-year senior, multi-year starter. Xavier Watts is a fifth-year senior. And Xavier Watts and Howard Cross were All-Americans last year. Benjamin Morrison's only a junior, but he's going into his third year as a starter, and he's providing more leadership, you know, at his position group. So it's just one of those things where there's just not a need for a leader per se. And now, again, does Drake Bowen need to provide some level of leadership in regard to, you know, hey, listen, we need you to, you know, get the calls right and do all this and those type of things. And that's good. And that's again, not unexpected. That's just that is expected of a middle linebacker. And that's kind of where Notre Dame is at. So when it comes to leadership on that side of the ball. So good question. Good question, Ball Pien Shalala. Let's go to John A1. John says, which group will be stronger on the Notre Dame offensive line in 2024? Guard or tackle? This is a really good. Okay, so John, I'm gonna answer your question two different ways. And the first way I'm gonna answer it is how you asked it, right? Guard or tackle? My answer would be guard. And here's why I would say that. Because it would not shock me if Notre Dame's best offensive lineman by the end of the year is Charles Jagasol. That would not shock me. He is the most physically gifted player. You could see the light maybe go on for Tosh. You could see the light go on for Emil Wagner. You could see the light go on for Sylvan Abshur. Kirby Lambert could come in, and it would not shock me if he plays right away this year. So there's a lot of talent at tackle. But right now, there's more questions than answers there. And so, that's my issue there. Then guard, okay? But here's the way you look at guard, okay? Because there's similar concerns about both. You know, Billy Schrauf, it has had a great spring, and that'll be one of the intel pieces I talk about is how he has played this spring. And so you feel good about him. And then the other guard position, you're like, okay, but isn't Pat Coogan kind of like Tosh Baker at right tackle? No, because we know that Pat Coogan can play a certain level. Like, we know the baseline for Pat Coogan. And I expect Pat to make some improvements now that he has 13 starts under his belt. But the difference between guard and tackle is maybe Emil Wagner beats out Tosh Baker. Maybe he doesn't. I don't know that he'll be ready. But what we do know is that left guard, you've got two guys with 10-plus career starts now battling for that job. There just, to me, is a greater sense of, if Pat Coogan does not improve this season, he won't be starting. Whereas we don't know that that's true of Tosh Baker at right tackle. We don't know that Tosh starting means he's improved. It could just mean that Emil didn't step up or Gerby's not ready. So I would go with guard, but not by as much as some people said, because I do think there's one position where there's a very talented, unproven player, and the other position where there's a veteran that's not as proven. But I just think when one guy's got three career starts and the other guy has 13, that there's a level of, okay, I can live with what I know about Coogan. I don't know that I can live with what I know about Tosh, because we've just seen so little of it in two of his three starts. Because like, he started two games last year, but Ryan, one of them was as the sixth offensive lineman in a 13 personnel thing, and he only played like three or four snaps whole game. I don't count that as a start. His other two starts were as a redshirt freshman back in 2021, and he wasn't very good. So it's different than Pat Coogan starts, which were all last year. Sure. Now, so that's the first way I want to answer the question, Ryan, is looking at it from the actual question. Now, if you were to say interior versus tackle, then it's a much easier question to answer. Because once you throw in Ashton Craig with Billy Shrouth and then Rocco and Pat Coogan battling, I actually feel pretty good about the interior of the offensive line. I really do. Because, again, if Pat Coogan doesn't get better, he won't be playing. Yep. If he's playing, it means he got better. And whereas at right tackle, there's a lot more of a question mark. So what would you say, Ryan? Which group do you think is going to be stronger in 2024, the guard position or tackle?
I mean, guard in its entirety, because I would even take it a step further and say that if, God forbid, something happened to Billy Shrouth where he got injured or something, then you slide Rocco over there, because we know, again, you have a stabling baseline of what to expect in that situation, right? So I think the experience really does kind of create a much higher floor to the guard position compared to the tackle position. I like, obviously, the huge upside of Charles Jagasaw, but again, you're really guessing on what right tackle is going to end up looking like. I would also say this is that if I have to find a starter on the offensive line that's kind of a surprise starter and stuff, I would rather find a guard than a tackle. Like, tackle's hard, man. And I'm not sure Notre Dame has a guy that's like ready right now. Because you mentioned Emile Wagner. Like, if Emile, like, let's say Tosh falters and Emile's not ready, then it's like, I might have to go to Gerby Lambert as a true freshman when he gets here in the fall, because I don't know if I have, or in the summer, I don't know if I have anybody else really ready that's ready to go. So I think that is a very difficult thing to replace as a offensive tackle compared to a guard as well.
And Ryan, you know, you could say, well, hey, look, maybe he's the next Joe Alt. Okay. Maybe he's the next Robert Hainsey. Maybe. Well, that's all fine and dandy, but I got a lot more examples of guys who weren't ready to play as true freshmen. That's pretty long. Yep. Quentin Nelson, Mike McGlinchey, Ronnie Stanley. I mean, there's a lot of great line. Liam Eikenberg, Aaron Banks. There's a lot of guys that didn't play as freshmen that you don't usually now say, well, you know, this guy did it, so that guy could do it. Well, Charles Jagasaw wasn't ready till game 13. Yep.
He was also a summer enrollee like Gerby's going to be, right? So, yeah, right. I mean.
In Joe Walt's situation, Joe Walt was also a summer enrollee. He was not an early enrollee. But, again, that's a kid who grew up for 18 years in the home of a 10-year NFL vet who's in the Kansas City Chiefs Ring of Fame at that position. Yep. You can't ignore that. Now, maybe Gerby's ready to play, Ryan. The point that I think we're both making is, You can't assume that for a true freshman offensive tackle. That's a lot to ask. If Charles Jagasaw goes into the season as your most experienced tackle, that's going to be concerning.
Sure.
The talent will be great. And when the light goes on and those kids figure it out, it's going to be fun to watch. But I think you mentioned this to me on the phone the other day, Ryan. Like, I'll take 2 years of Charles Jagasaw and Gerby Lambert playing together. The thought being that Charles is going to be so good that by the end of his junior year, he might be off to the NFL.
Let's see what happens.
But I mean, I could totally understand that. But if you're going to go, it's an easy answer if it's interior versus tackle. It's an easy answer. Right. Guard versus tackle is a little bit tougher. But I think Brian and I both fall in line that it is guard is going to be stronger. And honestly, that's important, Ryan, because tackle's hard, and it's ideal to have good tackles. But as an offensive coach, I can do more to protect my tackles in pass pro than I can to protect my guards in my center. When it comes to, I can chip, I can slide, I can put a tight end over there, I can, you know, those type of things.
Lose the pocket. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. It's really hard to protect against a bad interior.
Well, what play did Riley Leonard get hurt on against Notre Dame? It was interior pressure from Howard Cross, right?
Absolutely right. Good observation. Got another draft question on Super Chat, Ryan, from Tyler Evans. Thank you, Tyler, very, very much. He says, Ryan, do you see any sleeper going in the first round we are thinking about that we are not thinking about, like Craig Davis in 07 and Bruce Irvin in 12? So maybe, Ryan, not someone that you're predicting to go in the first round, although you can do that. I'd like to know if you have any sleepers that you think could be in the first round that maybe others aren't or should. Even more so, do you think there's any player that the buzz is such that he's going to jump into the first round and maybe it'll be a surprise to people and maybe he shouldn't?
I mean, there's always is, right? I mean, like you mentioned Craig Buster Davis and, you know, Bruce Irvin, but it happens every single year, Tyler. I mean, you could even bring up like, what was the kid's name? The guard out of Tennessee Chattanooga that the Patriots drafted, Cole Strange, a couple years ago, right? It's like, no one thought, I mean, I liked Cole, but like Cole was not a first round pick, you know? And
what about the Titus Howard kid that,
Alabama State?
Texans took a few years.
They panicked, man. Someone jumped in front of them to take their tackle, and then they were like, shoot, we need to tackle really badly, and we still need to take someone. So,
so bad.
They were freaking out in that situation. But, I mean, look, I a couple guys I think could jump in that maybe people aren't talking about enough. I think one is Christian Haynes, the guard from UConn. I just would not be shocked about that one. There's day two grades there, and I think that he's had a really clean and good draft process. So I wouldn't be shocked if he's a guy. Wide receiver-wise, I mean, there's a couple guys that I think could sneak in the first round that might surprise some folks. I mean, Ladd McConkey might be – I don't know if that's a surprise. I mean, he's had a great process.
Seen a lot more of that in mock drafts, Ryan.
Yeah. I mean, he's had a great process, man. I mean, he really has. He was uncoverable at the Senior Bowl. He went to the Combine, ran 4.3-something. Like, he's a really smart football player. He's a really technically sound football player, great route runner, and he's got some juice to burn, right? So – Ladd McConkey, maybe a guy that could sneak potentially.
His injury history would be the concern for me, Ryan.
Isn't just his best year though? Did he have?
He was banged up a little bit the year before as well. I don't know that he missed a lot of time because of it, but there were periods the year before they got. You just didn't notice because they had AD Mitchell. They had all these other guys that could step up.
My favorite misnomer, and someone said it, I think, on the Monday show this past week, was like, oh, Georgia never had good receivers. I'm like, hey, go look at the 2021 Georgia wide receiver group and tell me that they didn't have good receivers. Yeah. They had Jermaine Burton. They had Ladd McConkey. They had AD Mitchell. They had George Pickens. They had some guys.
Arian Smith, who could flat out fly.
Yeah.
Marcus Roseme, Jack Saint, who I've seen some people check might get drafted this year.
Yeah.
Late draft. You know what I mean? Yes. Yep. And they had this kid. I don't know if you've heard of him, Ryan. I think he's draft eligible this year. You might have heard of him. Playing tight end. This kid named Brock Bowers. I don't know if you've heard of him.
And if you want to count all pass catchers together, I mean, you could throw Daniel Washington in there too if you want.
Yeah. And the way they use
Eric Gilbert was on that team too, which was kind of wild to think about.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So. Well, and then they had the John Fitzpatrick kid who got drafted. Now, I don't know that he should have, but he did. Right. And they had a 5-star kid named Dominic Blaylock who couldn't get on the field.
Oh, he was so good. Then he got hurt, and it was the end of for him. But he was really talented before he got hurt. He had a nice game against Notre Dame as a true freshman, if I remember correctly.
Dominic Blaylock? No, you're thinking of somebody else. He was a freshman in 2021. Or he was a freshman in 2020. You know what? You're correct. He was a freshman. They had him listed as a sophomore in 2021. He was a freshman that year, Ryan. You are correct.
Yeah. I thought he had a couple nice catches against Notre Dame, if I remember correctly, with Fromm and those boys. But
I still can't believe Notre Dame lost that game. Still can't.
Yeah, it was weird. It was a weird game. But I guess those would be a couple. I'm trying to think if there's any defensive guys. I mean, I don't know Darius Robinson from Missouri is a guy that maybe, I don't know if some people would be like shocked about that one though, but he's a guy. Safety. I don't think there's any safeties that are going to go round one. The only one that I think like would be a shock is maybe Jaden Hicks from Washington State, the safety, if he's drafted like late 30s.
But isn't that kind of the thing though, Ryan? If the guy was a surprise, we wouldn't know about it right now.
Right. You know, well, I just don't know if there's any buzz about that one even being a possibility though. So I'll go with those couple.
Because Bruce Irvin had some buzz because he ran some crazy.
Oh yeah, he ran 4.4 something or 4.51 or something like that. Yeah, right. Some crazy number.
Yeah.
Craig Davis was a good one though, man. That LSU group was very overhyped that year.
And a lot of those guys that come out, Notre Dame had to deal with those guys in the Sugar Bowl. But a lot of those guys too that are surprises usually tend to not be high picks like Bruce Irvin, who I think went in the top 20. Right.
Yeah, he was very early. He was like 15 or something.
A lot of them were like in the late 20s, and like, you know, who, like the Chiefs took a DN a couple years ago that some people thought was a surprise for that spot, you know, for them.
Oh, yeah.
The kid from K-State, I believe.
Yeah. Uzama or whatever the heck the kid's name was.
You'll see some late picks like that where teams maybe draft for need, that kind of stuff. But
sure.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting process. There's some guys that I think would surprise draft Twitter that went in the first round that I think should be first round picks. But
who's that?
Keon Coleman.
Oh, they should go in the first round? Yeah.
Oh, yes.
In on Keon. Yeah, I'm all in on Keon. Yeah.
I know you are. I am. Yeah. I see some people on Twitter like he might fall to the third round. And I'm thinking,
what? I don't care about saying the name because I've thrown shade before, but Chris Trapasso from CBS Sports put him in the fourth round in a mock draft. I was like, okay.
What are you doing here? You know, right. It's like, well, he ran a 4.6.
He compared him to N'Keal Harry, and I'm like, oh, Lord. All right.
Like, that's just such a bad comp. Like, I just read some of it. Like I'll occasionally, Ryan, if I can't sleep at night, I'll go do the Pro Football Focus mock draft simulator.
It's fun with all the trades and everything.
Yeah. And I don't know that I've taken a pick at 12 yet, Ryan. I'm just going to be honest with you. I trade down every time.
I would too.
And sometimes, but the other day I think I might've downloaded it cause I was going to send it to you. But again, it was really late at night. So I probably forgot. But I had one where I made like three trades and I was like, oh, I think Ryan would love this draft. He might not like my quarterback, but he would like because I got Bo Nix.
I've come full circle in Bo Nix. Yeah. I don't mind him as a draft prospect,
but I got him much later. So it was like at 12. I don't know that I would love here it was, Ryan. So I traded down twice. Okay. I traded down to number 19. With the Rams. So the Rams came up and the Rams got Quinyon Mitchell.
Ooh,
is who they got.
Love that. Yeah.
And then I traded down and I got pick 52 and pick 83. So I got a second in it. Cause the Broncos have they have like one day two pick.
I think they have like four or five picks overall. Right. Or something.
Yeah,
like that.
They don't have a lot, but all their picks are they got a couple six rounders, a couple fourths maybe. Mm-hmm. And then at 33, I traded down again with the Panthers and I got their 33 and 39 and I gave them my number one at 19 and then 136. Okay. So then I picked at 33, 39, 52, 76 and 83. And here's the five kids I got in those spots.
Okay.
Bo Nix.
Okay.
Chris Braswell.
Okay.
Keon Coleman.
Okay.
Andrew Phillips from Kentucky in round three.
Corner.
Yeah. And Cedric Van Pran at center.
Okay,
and then the rest of my this was probably the best mock draft I've ever done, Ryan. The next pick I got in round four, because I'm not as locked in the Broncos don't need a running back. I'm like, well, they have talented players, but those guys are always hurt. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they need a running back.
I got Audric Estime at pick 121. Ooh. Ooh. I got Isaiah Adams in round five, the tackle from Illinois.
Yeah.
I got Taj Washington in round five. I got Anthony Gold in round five. And then I got Brennan Jackson in round six.
I like Brandon Jackson.
Yeah, so I knew you'd like that draft. I knew and it hit a lot of the needs that the Broncos have.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, if the Broncos could come out of this draft with Bo Nix, Chris Braswell, Keon Coleman, Andrew Phillips, Cedric Van Pran, and Audric Estime, you're going to see me doing backflips.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll be and draft, you know, some draft picks and stuff. So I was like, you're going to see a happy dude.
Denver and it's back to back. It's 12 and 13 with the Denver Broncos and the Las Vegas Raiders. They're in such a strange situation because everyone knows Minnesota's trading up to take one of the top four quarterbacks. So it's very interesting to see if Sean Payton forces a quarterback at 12, like whoever QB5 is.
Yes.
Or if the Raiders force it at 13. The Broncos have to be desperate for a quarterback this offseason.
Oh, 100%.
Their starting quarterback right now is
Jared Stidham.
That's the only quarterback on the roster.
And their backup is Ben DiNucci.
Oh, they have Ben DiNucci on the roster.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well,
James Madison, great. Yeah.
Yeah. But like the thing is for me, Ryan, with the Broncos, it's like, don't force it at 12 when you have so many other needs. You're there's not a quarterback in this draft class that you put onto this team and you're like, yep, we're AFC West contenders.
Good to go.
Not a one. Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Dan, none of them are that. And you have very few picks because you gave up a bunch of first rounds for Russell Wilson and you gave up a first and a second to get Sean Payton. You need to get some of those picks back. And so to me, yes, you could maybe take whatever quarterback you like, but I'm like, trade down, collect picks. And then, here's the deal. Look, if Bo Nix or Michael Penix are there after you've traded down, okay, cool. Take them. If not, I mean, I'd rather honestly take a chance on a Michael Pratt in round three or something like that, or a Spencer Rattler in round three than to take one of those guys at 12 How long have you known me that I've been like, I like Bo Nix. I think he was not good at Auburn. I understood it. Mm-hmm. Why, you know, but I felt he was a better player than he showed at Auburn, and I liked him the last years at Oregon.
Yeah.
As much as I like him, you still watch him play and you're like, but he's still not a top 15 NFL draft type player, which is okay.
He's not.
You know, so don't force the issue. And then if those guys aren't available, then you know what? It is what it is. You go sign a veteran to get you through the next year and hope that you've got a chance to go get a quarterback next year. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. I would be disappointed if they forced it at 12. And if they trade up to get a quarterback, I'm done. I'm going to become a Texans fan.
Sean Payton's always a very interesting drafter, to say the least. So I actually have no idea what they're going to do. Zero idea.
You're spot on. He could move up and take a quarterback, and he could trade down three times. Honestly.
Or he could take someone at 12, and you're like, oh, okay.
Sure. Like a middle linebacker? What? Right.
I mean, he's one of those drafters, man, where you're just like, I don't really know what to think of him as a drafter. But then it works out sometimes, obviously. Yeah. I felt the same way with Detroit last year when they took I mean, I like Jahmyr Gibbs. 12 was too high for Gibbs, though, in my opinion, even though he's a very good player. But then they took Jack Campbell in the top 20. I'm like, you took a running back and a middle linebacker in the year 2023 in the top 20? That's wild, man.
And
wild.
Worked out pretty well for him. I mean, if you take out
Jack wasn't great, but Jahmyr was really good.
Who they could have had, you take that context out.
Yeah, Jahmyr was great as a rookie for them. Really good as a rookie.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
All right, Aiden Benami with another one. What's up, Aiden? Is Eli Raritan 100% healthy? He looks to be dynamic and a playmaker, but he's been out, and you mentioned Cooper Flanagan getting the ones.
I can only tell you what I've been told. What I've been told is that Eli is healthy. They're just being careful with him this spring.
And they should
be. Like I've been told that Riley Mills and Howard Cross haven't taken a ton of reps this spring. No reason to why. What does Howard Cross need to prove to you, Riley Mills? I mean, there's some things they're doing individual work and all that, but like when they get to some team stuff, they're not getting it. That's good. Push those other guys. So I'm with you. I think you know who Eli Raritan is. It's just about keeping him healthy. Then this allows Cooper Flanagan to develop as a player now as well. And he's having a very good spring also, Ryan.
I mean, and the risk to it, right, is that if Eli does, God forbid, get injured again at tight end, now you're like, do we got to go to the portal now? Like, I mean, you're in a little bit of trouble numbers-wise.
Because we don't know when Mitchell's going to be back. And then, but even if Mitchell's back for A&M, Ryan, as I said in the show the other day, the next time Mitchell Evans plays all 12 regular season games will be the first time that Mitchell Evans played all 12 regular season games in Notre Dame.
Exactly.
I mean, so you just can't take that chance. And to your point, I think it would be if he's hurt and say the first month Mitchell Evans is out, you now have your tight end depth chart is Cooper Flanagan, pretty good number one.
Yeah.
I like that. Then after that, it's Jack Larson, Henry Garrity, and Davis Sherwood. I think Davis Sherwood showed last year he is a limited niche player, not a full-time tight end. And as much as you and I both like Jack Larson, I think we both agree also, and if I'm speaking out of turn for you, Ryan, let me know. I don't expect him to be a guy that's helping you in 2023 or 2024. He's going to need time to develop. Yeah. And we both like Henry Garrity. You and I talked about him on signing day 2 years ago. We had him on our show. We had him, Luke Talich, and Jordan Faze on our show because our point then was this is not your typical walk-on class, folks. These kids are scholar Division I football players. They're just coming to Notre Dame. But again, not as a redshirt freshman. I'm not expecting Henry Garrity to have to step in and play.
No.
You know, like
that's more like a year four, yes, year five.
Would it shock you ever if Henry Garrity was a part of the tight end rotation in Notre Dame? Wouldn't shock me one bit.
Down the road,
it would be concerning if it's in 2024. Just because I don't know that he's physically ready for that role yet. That's a good football player, but you don't want to have to play Henry too early because you don't have anybody else.
Right.
So to your point, you'd almost have to go to the pool at that point in time.
I mean, you need to be careful with it. I mean, because like you mentioned Mitchell, obviously, with the timeline. We'll see what happens. Raritan with his injury history. Kevin Bauman with his injury history. Like, it's just a lot of injured players historically in that room. So, yeah, you got to be careful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, let's go down here to some people we have not gotten questions from. Here we go. Here is one from Indy Estimate Trucking.
Indy Estimate Trucking LLC says, could Sam Pendleton or Sullivan Abshire play right tackle right now in a pinch, and would you let them compete for the starting right tackle job going into the summer?
Well, Ryan, I think Sullivan Abshire is indirectly competing for that job.
He's playing left tackle a lot right now, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So he's getting all those number two team reps at left tackle.
I'm pretty shocked that he's playing left tackle. That's really interesting. I never talked to you about that.
But I kind of like it because it's really forcing the issue with him in pass pro, which is there's never been any doubt with either one of us that Sullivan Abshire, if he's a starter in our name, is going to run block his butt off.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's never been a question. The question is, because he played in a triple option offense, I think I maybe saw three high school clips of him, maybe of him in pass pro in high school.
I don't think I ever saw any. So
yes, you did. Because what I'm talking about is the clips you took at practice at the Army All American game.
Oh yeah, sure.
That's what I'm referring to.
Wasn't on his highlight tape. Yeah, right. Yeah.
So I said clips, not highlights. Yeah. Clips.
Sure.
And then of course we saw him in the also. I honestly don't remember him taking I think I watched one game of his in high school where they might have thrown it once or twice. Like but he wasn't in pass pro. It was a run action throw. Yeah. So it wasn't like a pass set. So even when he was pass blocking in high school, it was like how Navy pass blocks. There wasn't really a pass set. Mm-hmm. And so left tackle makes sense. But here's the thing, Ryan, you and I both know this. If he's playing really well at left tackle and he's grading out higher than the guys at right tackle, that's an easy fix. You move him over. So he is competing, but you don't move him over there now because now then three guys are competing for one job as opposed to right now. Three guys are playing one spot as opposed to right now. You have three guys playing two spots. It just increases reps right now. But he is competing right now, in my opinion.
And he also played right tackle in high school, so he's used to being in his right-hand stance.
He needs to be. If you think he might be a left tackle someday, then you need to have him there. And you're also teaching him to be left-handed because there's a potential that Sullivan then slides inside to left guard.
Would love it.
Right? And so, yes, so the whole process, it's understandable why Notre Dame has him a left tackle right now, in my opinion. It was a surprise. Mm-hmm. I'm with you, Ryan. I was surprised. But I think it makes a lot of sense. It gets him more rep opportunities. It allows him to, which allows him to compete at right tackle without having to split reps between two other guys. Mm-hmm. And it also is teaching him to play left-handed, something he did not do in high school, which I think would make sense. I would love, I mean, you talk about a dream scenario is in a year or two, maybe this year, but thinking more so in the future, left side of the line with Sullivan Abshire and Charles Jagasol, where Charles Jagasol is your smaller guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that'd be fun to watch. You know, I mean, Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price are both running for like 1,200 yards. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be nuts. But you need to teach him to play left-handed, and that would then make the transition to playing left guard. If you go have him from playing right-handed at tackle to left-handed at guard, that would be quite the transition, in my opinion. Yeah. And I don't know that they're ready to make that transition because I do think they want to give him a legitimate chance at guard, at tackle at this point. So, because it'll be once he moves into guard, Ryan, it's almost kind of like you're not moving it back out.
Yeah, you rarely ever make that move back out. Yep. Well, and the second part of that is for Indy Estimate is that I believe that if you are in the fourth quarter and you have just had injury after injury, could I throw Sam Pendleton in at tackle and he could get me out of a football game? Yeah, I think we could do that. But he's not going to ever be a tackle on a full-time basis, which is why he's playing a lot of center this offseason, obviously, too.
I could see Sam Pendleton playing right tackle in college, Ryan, just not in this offense.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, could he do it if Paul Christ was running an offense somewhere?
At Wisconsin or something.
Yeah. Could he play that? I think so. In to a degree, kind of what Michigan did the last couple of years, I could see him doing that to a degree, but he would just be solid at it. He wouldn't be really good at it.
Right.
Whereas as a guard or center, I think he could be a really good football player, in my opinion. But to your point, I honestly feel like if I had to, there's not a position I wouldn't trust Sam Pendleton to get us out of a game playing.
Oh, he's a very smart kid. Yeah.
And tough. Smart. And he's a, you know, he's a better than you'd think athlete. I just don't know that he has the demeanor. That's my biggest question mark, Ryan. Does he have the demeanor to play tackle? Right. I mean, that, that would be a bit of a question. I don't think he has the foot quickness to be an elite edge in space edge player. We both agree on that.
Yeah.
But I also worry that if he did have to do that over a period of time, how many pass blocks would he miss because he's thinking, I'm coming off, I'm trying to dominate you.
Right.
You know, that would be a little bit of a concern that I would have.
Was also interested to see Pendleton playing center now.
Yes.
It's very intriguing. But we'll see.
I think they're just trying to get it to where he's just one of those guys, Ryan, you're like, this kid's got it. We got to find a place for this kid to play.
Yeah,
you know, and right now they're just older guards that are just ahead of him right now, and so
he could be the ultimate swing guy too, man. Could back up with three different positions inside. So yeah,
to your point, to this question from NDSMA Trucking, right? I mean, right now there are four positions that if you get into a game, I could see them playing. I don't know that right now I'd put him at left tackle, but could he get you out of a game at right tackle? Absolutely. And could he play both guard spots? He already has at Notre Dame, and now he's playing center. Yep. You love kids like that. And here's one thing, you know, a kid's going to fight you for 60 minutes. And that's the one thing I can't guarantee how good Selvin Abshur and Sam Pendleton are going to be as football players, but I can promise you one thing. If they're ever on the field for Notre Dame, you're going to have a fight on your hands. You may win that fight if you're the other team, but it's going to be a fight. It is absolutely going to be a fight. And I think you nailed it, especially Sam, you know,
Sam. He's a mean guy. Really nice kid off the field. Yes. But he's a very mean guy on the field. Yes. So
really, him and Sullivan's kind of a big goofy kid, you know, joking kind of kid if you're ever around him. But like when you get him on the
country
field,
boy,
they want to smack people when they're on the field. And that's what I loved about Hestand's class. Even Joe Otting, who's a smaller kid, Joe Otting played with some attitude. You know, Chris Terrick, I wondered, is the foot speed, foot quickness there? You know, questions about him. But here's one thing I don't question. That kid was a mauler.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, that was like the ultimate pancake highlight film, watching those five offensive linemen and he stands, you know, when Charles Jagasaw is probably not your number one pancake guy.
Yeah. He was like, nice guy of the group. Exactly. The undefeated heavyweight wrestling champion was the nice guy. So, yeah,
exactly. You know, you got yourself some maulers. There's no doubt about that. There's no doubt about that. All right, Ryan, we had another super chat from Rob Osgood.
Good to see you, Rob. Rob says, thank you so much, Rob. Hey, guys, with the playoffs starting this year as a coach, would you be willing to watch playing time towards the end of the year for playoff time?
No, I'm starting that game one. Right. I'm going to have a deeper rotation game one. Because here's my point, Ryan. When you look at Notre Dame's schedule, I would rather them pull back reps against Northern Illinois, Miami of Ohio, Purdue. Because as you know, once you hit that fatigue point in a season – one game off where you get 10, 15 less snaps is not going to necessarily get you back into game shape. Or, I mean, get you back into, you know, full health, you know, where you've got your juice back. It's about not getting to that point at all. And so I'm going to maximize my rotation much more so in those games than I have in the past. Sure. Where, I mean, I'm going to have Howard Cross and Riley Mills, you know, they're going to be part of the game plan, but I'm rotating early against Northern Illinois, against Miami of Ohio and Purdue. And if we put that game away at halftime, you know, hey guys, you're out. You know, it's same thing with like, you know, maybe like a Xavier Watts. You're up 27-0 at halftime against, you know, Northern Illinois. How much do I really need to play Xavier in the second half? How much do I really need to play, you know, certain guy, you know, Riley Leonard in that situation? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I would absolutely do that because you're now preparing for a 16 game season and you only get 3 weeks off basically for the playoff game. You know what I mean? So yeah, I think you need to start that now. Cause I just believe, Ryan, and I could be wrong. If you wait till the end of the year, you run the risk of it being too late where you kind of, if you do it throughout the year, you get into that rhythm to where you know, you can't necessarily guarantee me that you can back them off in November because you got Florida State and USC on your schedule.
I mean, like a lot of the durability stuff, like later in the year, is because of the constants every single week, and it kind of piles up, right? So I think like managing that load a little bit throughout the year is a very smart thing. I'm hoping and I'm praying. Last year was really good by Notre Dame. When they played against an inferior team, they beat the brakes off of them and they got some younger guys in the game. It was great, right? But the year before that, if you remember, Notre Dame was in battles with teams that they just shouldn't be battling with, right? Where you're just like, dude, I thought this was going to be a get right game and a game where you can get some of the younger guys in. And then it turned out not to be that way. So the Northern Illinois, the Miami Ohio's, like those teams, Notre Dame needs to come out and throttle early and let some young guys get some reps, obviously. So I hope that we're not in a couple of barn burners with a couple inferior teams this year, because that is very counterproductive.
Got another one about Sam. Got a couple here about Sam Pendleton. I want to get to Ryan that I'm going to pull up now.
Sam Pendleton in this chat,
because, yeah, because
former friend of the show. Yeah, so, yeah.
because it is relevant to a conversation we already just had. So before we get too far removed from that, I did want to bring up these two questions.
Irish Eagle 90 says, is Sam Pendleton playing center a permanent move, or getting him used to different positions to get on the field faster?
Yes. I mean, it's a little bit of both. You know what I mean? Is it a permanent move in that they're not just moving him to center for the next week to get some reps at it? I think they're moving him there, and the intention is, for now, we're going to leave him there.
Yeah.
But it's a situation where he's played guard, he's played center. If there's a need at any of those positions, you know you can easily move Sam there. So it's a little bit of both. You know, so because like he could be the backup center from now until whenever behind Ashton Craig. But if they get into a game next year and Billy Shrouth goes down and they're like, okay, well, you know, let's say Billy Shrouth is down, and Rock goes out or Coogan's out or whatever. And, you know, look, you're not going to put Ty Chan or Christopher Tarek in at right guard. You're going to slide Sam Pendleton over there and put him there. It's kind of like what they did with Andrew Krstofek. Although I think that Sam right now to me is a better player than Andrew was at that age, because his power has developed in ways that Andrew's just never really did. I really liked how Andrew moved, and I loved his high school film, but he just never developed the power. And as he got bigger, he lost a little bit of that athleticism that made him such a good high school player. Sam showed up over 300 pounds with good foot agility for that size and great power potential. So he could easily move that, even if he is the permanent backup center.
Right.
You know, that's the reality.
And you need a center that's going to be able to play as a backup too, is the big thing, right? Like, I love Joe Otting. I think Joe Otting could be really good at Notre Dame, but he's still 280 something pounds right now, right? Like, he's still a little bit of, he's probably a year away from being able to actually contribute in some capacity. So this makes it very easy. If in case Ashton Craig, again, God forbid something happens, you now have a guy that's been practicing there, that has reps, that's over 300 pounds, that's ready to go. So I think it's also just making sure you have a center in place that you are willing to put into a football game in an important, crucial situation in 2024.
It's also similar to what we talked about with the move from tackle to guard, in that if you have Sam Pendleton playing guard and you get into that emergency situation, well, let's put him at center. He's not going to be ready to play that. He's not going to be able to handle that. Right. The fact that you know, play him, get him all the reps at center, it'll be much easier to move him back out to guard. But you have to, if he is going to be your next option at guard and center, right now, his reps need to be at center, because that's the position that's not natural for him. He wasn't a center in high school. Not that he's, I mean, he snapped before. I mean, I think he said that that he snapped before.
Yeah, he was practicing with it.
But he was never a center. Now, get him that work. And if you have a need at guard, then Sam can just, right now, he can move right out to guard easily. Yeah. But if he's splitting reps between the two, you're losing opportunities for him to get more comfortable at center, to your point, Ryan. So I think it speaks volumes about what the staff thinks about Sam Pendleton, that they're moving him like this. Like, this kid can play for us. This kid gives us something at a lot of spots. We need to get him ready to help us in multiple spots. As a redshirt freshman, it tells me that Sam has made a very strong impression on Joe Rudolph. Hey, I trust this kid. This kid can play for me. Now, it's just in Sam's situation, he's just got Billy Shrouth ahead of him, who's an older, even more talented player. He's got Pat Coogan and Rocco Spindler ahead of him, who are 2 years older than him, you know. Yep. But don't be shocked if at some point in time the staff decides, either this year or next, like, hey, this kid 72 is just too good not to play. We got to get him on the field.
And obviously, it's a big, not only the trust factor, but I think a part of that trust factor is that he is a very smart kid, obviously, right? Like you can't, you wouldn't just be able to move to center like this and be able to help handle the protections and all that type of stuff if you weren't a really sharp guy. So I think that fact that they're willing to move him as frequently as they have the first 2 years tells you that they have a lot of trust in his ability to kind of digest his responsibilities as well.
I want to push back on something here, Ryan, from NC Notre Dame fan. He goes, I hate cupcakes. It's not right for the fans and for the support of college football, and I hate when Notre Dame does it as well. I'm not afraid to say it just because I'm a Notre Dame fan. I mean, here's my number one issue with your problem, the ending of it. I'm not afraid to say it just because I'm a Notre Dame fan. You're now saying basically that anyone who doesn't take your point of view is only doing it because they're a Notre Dame fan. The reality is every Notre Dame team ever has played cupcakes. I mean, let me go show you some of the high school teams that Newt Rockne's teams played back in the day, you know?
I mean, I would also say that every college football team ever has played some cupcakes, so it's not even just a Notre Dame thing, but yeah.
And you have to, because here's the reality of it. I care more about the Notre Dame players than I do about the Notre Dame fans when it comes to how you're putting a schedule together, okay? And the reality is no team, I don't care if you hate it or not, it has to be done. Everyone does it. And this notion that Notre Dame should play 12 hard games is ridiculous. Notre Dame should absolutely play a MAC team every year. Absolutely should play a MAC team every year. It's part of developing the program. Because here's the thing. The same people crying about Notre Dame playing a MAC team or whatever will be the same people crying about, why doesn't Notre Dame ever get their young guys on the field? Well, because you have them playing a Power 5 team that was in a bowl game last year every week. And so, of course, they're not getting some of that rep. You have to play that. Go look at Notre Dame's 1988 national title team. They played Rice. The 89 team played SMU in SMU's first game back from not having a program for 3 years. You know what I mean? So every team plays those. Every team should play those. You're not being smart as a coach or an administrator if you're playing a mid to upper level big Power 5 team every week. That is poor coaching. That is poor leadership. That is just smart. And you should absolutely not play a Power 5 team every week. I just think that's utter nonsense. Now, can you go too far and your schedule's 2 weeks? Absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. I criticized Michigan for that last year. But the fact is you should play those type of teams. And I have no problem playing two MAC teams in a year. Especially when one of those MAC teams just won 11 games last year, guys. Like, they're not playing like an 0-12 Ball State team. They're playing a Miami of Ohio team that has NFL players on their roster, Ryan. You could speak to that. And that won 11 games last year.
And they would beat the brakes off of Navy, too, Miami, Ohio last year.
Yes.
Yes.
So that's my thing is can you go too far with it? Yes. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Should you be mindful of who you play in the non-conference as a conference opponent when you know you're in a weak division or your overall schedule is weaker? Sure. Yeah. There you go. But also I would also tell you to putting Northern Illinois and Miami of Ohio in the same category as an FCS team or a team like Mercer is also incredibly misguided, because here's a little nugget for you, Ryan. The two MAC teams that Notre Dame fans are upset about, they both made bowl games last year.
Yeah.
They both had a winning record last year. Mercer last year.
I will not stand for the Mercer shade, though. I will not stand. Ty James, one of the best receivers in the FCS last year, and we're throwing shade at Mercer. No, thank you.
Ryan, y'all can tell Ryan is in full NFL James, draft baby. Mode. But to your Ty point, James. Though, I mean, Mercer's a 9-win team in the FCS level, but they would get smacked by Miami of Ohio and probably Northern Illinois.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, they lost to Ole Miss 73-7, right? And so that's a whole different animal than playing an 11-win Miami of Ohio team or a 7-win Northern Illinois team. Because I'll be honest with you, about 10 years ago, there was an Illinois team or two that might have been able to beat Notre Dame.
Northern Illinois, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. When they had the Jordan Lynch kid.
Jordan Lynch, a quarterback. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Good, yeah. So, you got to be smart about it. But, yes, you need cupcakes. You need games that you just know you're going to win. Every team needs it. And it's ridiculous to not do that, in my opinion. It's irresponsible to your team and to your players to not have that.
And we get to see Brett Gabbert play quarterback for Miami, Ohio. So that's what's up. Another Gabbert playing Notre Dame, which is going to be fantastic.
Oh, how long has he been in college?
It's got to be a sixth year, I think. Yeah. Has to be a sixth year.
Yeah. Now,
funny enough, is his brother was like 6'5", 230 something, right? Like Blaine. Yeah. He's like 6 foot, like 200 pounds, maybe, like soaking wet, which is pretty hilarious.
Now, Ryan, I have said I don't like the notion of playing FCS teams unless you're going to play an in-state school or a top FCS team. Yeah. Like I've actually said in the years ago that one of my formulas for evaluating a team's strength of schedule or rewarding a team if I'm in the playoff committee is if you don't play an FCS team that has been in the top 25 within the last 3 years, I'm not counting that as a win.
Sure.
Right.
Well, I would like, say this. When
Georgia played Savannah State 1 year and they were awful. Yeah. Being like 80 something to nothing. I'm not giving you a win for that. I'm not counting that as a win.
Yeah. Because there are still some quality in the FCS. I mean, I would say this. There's quite a few Power 5 teams, or Power 4 teams, I guess, now for last year that would have lost to South Dakota State in a football game. Just flat out would have lost to South Dakota State. They were a great football team last year, like absolutely dominant.
Iowa was a pretty good team 2 years ago. Did they play Iowa 2 years ago, right? It wasn't this past year, was that they play Iowa? Was
I think it was 2 years ago, I think.
And they won 7-3? Iowa won 7-3?
Yeah, because they had a
touchdown.
They had a safety and two safeties and a field goal to win that game. Yeah.
So I mean, why hasn't North Dakota State played an FBS team in the last few years?
Because nobody they will
this year.
Yeah,
I think they play Colorado this year, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. That you're absolutely right, because nobody will play them. Like nobody.
Remember, I know it's not a Power 5 team, but Colorado State scheduled South Dakota State like 2 or 3 years ago, and South Dakota State beat the brakes off of Colorado State, like smashed them, man. Smashed them.
It was 2022, Ryan, when they played. It was a 7-3 ball game. I remember Vince and I were listening to that in the car on our way to Ohio State. Mm-hmm. It was Iowa had 166 yards of offense in that game. They were so freaking ugly. Bad on offense.
Iowa and Northern Iowa had a couple nice battles a couple years ago, too, because Northern Iowa is a tough FCS team usually. So,
well, Madison's beaten ACC teams in the past.
Yep.
You know, they beat Duke 1 year, I believe. They beat Virginia Tech 1 year. We've seen games like that. I think Montana beat a number of years ago back when they were really, really good. I think they beat a Power 5 team.
They probably beat someone. I know
Eastern Washington almost beat. Remember that big time like FCS quarterback they had a few years ago? And they almost beat somebody. It was the year before, a year after they won a title.
Vernon Adams?
Yes, the kid that went to Oregon.
Yeah,
and I think they gave Washington or somebody like that a real tough game.
I think Washington lost to Montana State 2 years ago, maybe?
Might have.
3 years ago?
Might have.
Washington lost to some FCS team 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, let me look it up, Ryan, because you are – Montana. I was correct.
Montana.
2021, they lost to Montana 13-7.
13-7, yeah. I knew it was a close game like that. Yeah.
Yep. So we've seen that before. So if you want to play a good FCS team, okay, I'm cool with that. That was my issue with Tennessee State. I just was like, you know, they're just not very good. That's my issue with it. So you want to play an FCS team. All right, cool. Play Youngstown. Like honestly, there have been years in the past where Ohio State playing Youngstown State would have been tougher than them playing, you know, Kent State or Akron. You know, I mean that, you know, but do also, that. Don't go play, you know, Davidson. Or you know what I mean, or something like that. That's my
and story. Also the FCS gave us one of the greatest Big House moments of all time when App State went in
App
there
State.
And smacked.
But see, but again, that was a really good team. Like, it was a great team. And it should also be regional. Like, why is Florida State playing Duquesne? Why? What's the purpose of that? That's good for Duquesne
because they know it'll kill Duquesne.
Right, but like you got all those schools down south that you could play. You know, play Jacksonville.
Oh man,
State.
they want a part of Pittsburgh, baby. Let's play the Duquesne Dukes.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
So I think Jacksonville State's D1 now, but you know, didn't they beat Auburn or almost beat Auburn a few years ago when they're still an FCS school? I
think they did.
Yep. All right, let's get back up top here. Mr.
Ooh, Armani Roberts. Edwards, Corey Lynch at safety for App State. Yeah, bud.
Why are you all trying to do that to my guy, Antoine? You know what I mean? If Pitt wants to play Duquesne, I'm cool. If Penn State wants to play Duquesne back when, I'm good with that. I'm truly good with that because there's, in some ways, Ryan, too, it's not even about football. It's about you know, we're all part of the same state system. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? The state school system. And so Ohio State's playing, you know, Bowling Green, and it's good for that state system because they're getting some of that Ohio State football money because they're all part of the same act. Because it's like in North Carolina, University of North Carolina, NC State. There's some others like UNC Wilmington, UNC Greensboro. Those are all UNC Charlotte. They're all part of like the same actual school system. And so it makes sense for them to play those teams. It doesn't make sense for Florida State to play Duquesne.
Right.
It would make sense for Pitt or Penn State to play Duquesne, or even Ohio State to play Duquesne, because, you know, it's right across the border. So yeah, those are some of my thoughts. If you're going to play an FCS team, it better be one that's good, and it better have some non-football related reason why it makes sense for your program.